another system. Use that for every measure that we have here that hasn't been in effect. I just see no basis for that at all.
It is inconsistent with a teacher retirement system.
Well, but we have a bill dealing with that too, so I just would rule that out.
I would
have a dissenting opinion.
I could go along with
striking the first one about inconsistent with other systems.
If the other members are, it is a questionable thing.
Do you acknowledge that it is in the bill? It asks for a third option.
I acknowledge only that, of course, it isn't in effect now. But if we could use that for every rule, I think it's faulty reasoning. For every bill that we dealt with, we could say this is inconsistent. It does not now exist.
Well, my point is it is.
That's the most conservative view you could possibly take, Sam.
My point is that it is in the bill, and I want to know why it's in there.
Almost reactionary.
Why is it in the bill?
Pardon?
Why is it in the bill?
Well, I think new ideas or new concepts. Do you want a retirement system that's static all the time? You say it's inconsistent with current practices.
No. Well, to conclude, this Division of Retirement Benefits has already awarded benefits under that third option that is describable. And it was determined at a point in time thereafter that that wasn't allowable, and so they were denied it. So
because this is not a part of the law, then, this isn't obviously.
Yeah. Well, shall we pare it down to the last three?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, if we're going to do these other bills that we have on our plates at this point and get the Senate bills 90 and 91 as Paul had wanted, we are going to have to haul it.
Yeah. Okay, House Bill 161. It permits a teacher to receive retirement credit for service in the U.S. Merchant Marines between April 30th, 1940, April 29th, 1952, treats this service in the same way as service in the armed forces. We have a fiscal note that this would possibly affect 10 individuals.
I think the argument on that was that at least the one that I've heard was that these people in the Merchant Marine were, you know, in danger just as much and serving their country just as much as the military people, and I think that's the argument for it is one of equity from that.
Yeah. Now, are all other branches of the service eligible for this? Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force.
Yeah,
but the Merchant Marine was quadruply paid.
Let me read what we've got here in this. It says, Merchant Marine service was performed in lieu of military service. During the period served, they received regular civilian pay. Bonuses were paid for particularly hazardous assignments. The person had the choice of accepting an assignment or not accepting that assignment. There is no federal veterans benefits are payable for service in the Merchant Marine. And I want you to keep thinking this as compared to regular veterans. You know.
You're including or excluding Social Security?
Is there a bill for Rosie the Riveter next?
Okay. However, most service on merchant vessels during this period is covered by union pensions. If this type of service were granted, it would open the door for future groups of individuals who were exempt from military service because of their civilian employment, but which was deemed more important to the war effort. So, taking those three comments, starting right at the very top again, the Merchant Marine service was performed in lieu of military service. Rather than going to the service, they went to the Merchant Marine. During the period they served, instead of getting military service pay, they got civilian pay. And also bonuses were paid for going into the hazardous duty areas. But the person had a choice of where they were going. Now, I sat in a committee, and I know where there's a couple of veterans over there in Charlie Parr's committee that were really against this. They said those SOBs weren't doing their share. You know, they sneaked into it to get a void to be going into the service.
I know one German U-boat commander that sent 100 ships to the bottom of the North Atlantic, and he's still alive today, and they sunk about 2,000. You know, these were merchant men. I don't know a lot of guys in the Marine Corps that never fired a rifle at anybody. So that doesn't really count with my father.
Well, the other two points is that, like I say, the federal government has determined not to grant a benefit to these merchant Marines. And so we would be doing something that's not even consistent with their granting of one. But must be recognized that a pension was paid to most of those who served on commercial vessels because they were covered at that time by union pensions. And, but the, I think the most important point is the third point, if, you know, is where do you draw the line as far as opening up to particular groups? I think the point about opening up to civilian employment is very, very good argument. I didn't go in the service because my job was deemed, you know, too important to the war effort. Therefore, I stayed home and I welded on ships or whatever.
Well, most of the guys that welded didn't get the opportunity to stay home. You know, that's why they were using women. Most of the guys.
Well, maybe I shouldn't have welded. Yeah. Something else.
But these guys had the option. You know, they had. You know, they were exempt because they had to get the stuff to Russia and they had to get the stuff to England and everything. And, a high percentage of these guys are still out there in the Atlantic, at the bottom, you know. And I know guys that spent the war in Alaska, for Christ's sake, and all they did was sit in a, watching a boiler cook up there in Anchorage or something, and they never did anything, and they're getting credit for it.
Well,
this was always,
good duty assignments and bad duty assignments, but I don't know, once you get drafted and the guy says go there, you didn't have a chance to stand up and say, no, I don't like that assignment, I'd rather go over here.
Well, however, these guys that went in the Merchant Marines knew what the risk was. They weren't coming back. They were going, they were getting
back. Maybe that choice of duty, if it was hazardous duty, the fact that they volunteered for it sort of might not be.
Well, just like the guy at the committee said, we had some Merchant Marines on our ship and we were out there and we were taking fire. And they used to just whack at us. You guys are making $3 a day, and I'm making 15 or 20 times that a day, you know. And besides that, I'm getting off the ship next week because it's getting too hot for me.
Yeah, well.
So, I don't know. I guess touch is kind of dear to me.
We have another bill that relate at all closely to this. If I detect...
Now we have National Guard coming up next.
If I detect a facetious turn of events here, we're perhaps addressing, we need to be concerned not only about these who are alive and survive, maybe we should be looking for a bill that addresses itself to those who didn't come back.
Well, being from Boston, and a lot of my people were in the Merchant Marines, you know, I mean, they were in the, you know, my father's been shelled by U-boats and torpedoes, you know, and, we always considered those people as being military people, and they weren't trying to evade. They weren't draft dodgers, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. You would never tell that to a merchant marine, or ever call them a draft dodger, I'll tell you that.
Maybe we're looking at a problem that, you know, it's going to be much broader than the merchant marines. It's adding another group to the system, and you know, depending on how you feel about adding groups to the system, I think is kind of the bigger question. There's some kind of patriotic justification for Army, Navy, and Marines to be in there. There, you can extend that also to Merchant Marine or.
USO workers.
Well, I suppose the pilots who ferried, you know, the bombers over to Europe and the
It seems to me that if you've got military people that were stationed stateside and never got out of the United States, I mean, there was nothing dangerous about that, but they get service for the credit. Why wouldn't we be paying credit to the gals that welded ships? They had supported the war effort.
Well, that's what I said. The point is, how far are you willing to go?
So what I'm saying is just, what I'm getting down to is that doggone military shouldn't have been in this retirement system in the first place.
I was
where
here,
I'm coming from initially, you know.
I was here at the time that the military credit went in, and at that time I heard the discussion primarily on the basis, well, first of all, it was an interruption of duty. You were already in the work for, whether it was a public employer or a teacher's place. And but also there was the argument that these people were working at a very low salary or pay. I wasn't aware that the Merchant Marines were at civilian pay at that time, so that is another aspect, I think, that is a difference.
I'm trying to get away from the patriotic reasoning, because I don't think there's, you know, everybody that was involved, I feel, in the war effort at somehow, well, is in, you know, entitled to everybody else's thanks for doing that, you know. But I don't know how far you can go as far as giving, you know, extending benefits over and over and over. And I guess I'm looking for a reason other than patriotic, and the reason I come up with is just opening the system to more and more groups, and I don't know if that's good or bad.
There's an umbrella precedent, and that was, at the very beginning, I'm not sure how far to go back, maybe 25 years or more, there was already a provision that if an Alaskan had been teaching in the schools of Alaska, was called into active duty, he immediately got credit, retirement credit for that period that he was called away in the service. If he returned back to his teaching services at the conclusion of his military duty. And not only was that allowable, but it was allowable above any 10-year limitation. Okay, as long as he's from Alaska. So that precedent was already established. Eventually it was worn away a little bit, becoming an almost a kind of a military bonus.
Extended but, peacetime service.
Yeah, but also the other extenuating condition was that a person who was coming into education, even from stateside, that his career in education had been postponed because of service in the military. So that was a secondary condition. So we moved beyond that to this one of the Merchant Marine. You know, seems like some of us still see that a little bit outside the ballpark that we're talking about. I don't know who would venture a definition of what Merchant Marine service is, you know, as to whether it's military service or it is not military service, you know, whether that's important, but that has been used as the basis for which credit has already been given, that some kind of military service-related activity.
I would be interested in if there is a definition of, yeah, like military.
I know of a case in point of an individual very personally.
It must be somewhere. Somebody
has to be abused.
And so on. But I.
If the federal government has not allowed Merchant Marine service, that's kind of an indication that they don't consider it military service. But isn't there. There's some kind of a Merchant Marine Act, isn't there? That allows for retirement for Merchant Marine federal?
Most of that.
Now, well, you were relating the benefits that they would have earned in the service. Now, they would be covered under Social Security. I'm not saying that's all you want. They would have that, and if they were in the Merchant Marine Union of some sort, would there be some kind
Maritime
of a benefit?
Union? Yeah.
Maritime Union? Is that possible?
Very definitely.
Must be some kind of.
I move we accept the fiscal note.
Objections?
It isn't a great amount.
No.
Well, it's a time frame.
I guess
get a feeling somebody knows somebody sitting about that date, doesn't it?
I wonder. I guess a thing that would be interesting to know.
Charlie wouldn't tell me.
Is that is this going to constitute a double, say, retirement for some of these people?
Yeah.
Does it make any difference?
Example?
Good.
Sure.
We can do that, Dan. No reason why we shouldn't. Well, I believe the one individual whom I know is Horace Woodward, who is a retired teacher and principal from the Anchorage system, and in the earlier years he was. He was in the Merchant Marine, And somehow his time framework was other than, he's already in that scene, somehow he didn't get into the military and get any bonus credit or otherwise. After coming to Alaska, or thereabouts, he was also in the realty business and moved from that in, on into school business. And so I know at this point in time he had not qualified for anything in that area of the military service. And so I feel certain that he would be one of the 5, 9, or 15 who...
Where is he from, Fairbanks?
Anchorage. Whose interest would be served by this bill.
Doesn't the military come in 10 years outside service?
This one took the 10 years.
Well, and I thought he already had the 10 years and wanted this above that stand.
That might well be.
Yeah, I think so, because he was at Charlie Parr's committee and he talked about
this. No. We've never included Merchant Marine as military service teacher system.
Well, but he already, my point is, I think he brought 10 years in from outside.
He couldn't have brought 10 years Merchant Marine in.
No, 10 years of teaching service.
Outside, regular teaching service.
So I don't think he'd qualify for more.
Framework is correct. I can remember out on the stage, and when he was making his presentation, I knew he was in error. He wasn't talking to the question. And Parr never really ever understood that he was that, he was...
But he wanted military credit for it, but he wanted it in addition to the 10 years of outside service he brought in from the States.
It's not included in the 10-year outside service limitation if it's...
Oh, it isn't.
If entry into the armed forces is immediately preceded by Alaska membership service and following discharge. That's the only exception.
He doesn't qualify there either.
There, just the interesting thing as far as military service goes, I think there's a lot of protections and benefits that are, go along with it. Because when I went in the Army from Ketchikan, I even enlisted, and I was working at the pulp mill at the time, and they had to keep a position open for me until I got back 3 years later. And my seniority kept going. If I wanted to come back to the pulp, I never went back, but I could have gone back with 3 years additional seniority because I was performing a military obligation, of which I asked for. I enlisted.
Now, what's your point?
Well, that there are a lot of protections already.
Yeah.
And benefits, that, have occurred at the time that they...
Yeah.
Military duty. So it isn't as if these groups, the military or Merchant Marines or anyone, really lost a lot by not having these benefits. This is an extra. They already have benefits for doing what they did. And this is something extra. It's not as if they're completely destitute with no benefits.
I think we're ready for a question.
And, fiscal, there are no objections to the fiscal note. We'll go ahead and vote on House Bill 161. Jerry?
Do not.
Stan?
Do not pass.
Do pass.
Merritt?
Do not.
Paul?
Do not.
The chairman will vote do not.
Yes.
5 do not, 1 do pass, and 1 abstention. Reasons? I guess one of the reasons would be the board opposes additional groups being added to the system.
Well, I would think probably the classification, it seemed to me that one of the things was that they were not in military pay. But on regular pay was a factor that influenced
it
me.
Was not considered by the board to be within the definition of military service.
That in this case, perhaps your vote speaks for itself very well. I mean, it was a question of should you include the Merchant Marine?
Yeah. Well, it consists of civilian employment, which lies outside the military service realm.
Really like the reasons
that I think I, being in the minority opinion here, I would tend to like to see in there that Merchant Marine Service is not under our definition. It's not deemed military service.
I think that gives a better reason than just letting it stand.
So what?
Merchant Marine Service in the Merchant Marine, under our definition, is not deemed military service.
That pretty much takes care of everything.
Yeah, but I...
Pardon me? Merchant Marine Service, under our definition, is not deemed military service.
The board did not consider Merchant Marine falling within the definition.
Okay, the board did not feel that, that Merchant Marine Service should appropriately be included under military service?
It doesn't fall within the realm of military service.
Well, that of course is the question in the bill, is whether or not to include it. That's what it says.
And yeah, we're saying no, don't include it because we don't think it's military service.
Okay.
And that also speaks to the fact that military service is included before. I mean, we're sort of acknowledging that that's in there. Senate Bill 60. Senate Bill 60 says, similar in nature.
I'm still not sure I've got this the way you want it. The board did not feel that Merchant Marine Service fell within the definition of military service? Is that?
Yeah, we're all assuming everyone understands that military service is
part. Yeah, yeah. Senate Bill 60, affecting the PERS system, includes active members of the Alaskan Naval Militia in the Alaska National Guard Retirement Plan, permits an active member of the Alaska National Guard or Naval Militia to count any combination of active service with the Alaska National Guard, Alaska Naval Militia, or Armed Forces of the United States towards retirement, prohibits payment of a deferred benefit until application for the benefit is filed with and approved by the Department of Military Affairs. The analysis on the fiscal note is interesting. This bill would afford members of the Alaska Naval Militia the same retirement benefits afforded to members of the Alaska National Guard. However, the Department of Military Affairs advises that there are currently no persons in the Alaska Naval Militia, nor are there likely to be any in the near future. Therefore, there is no cost to this bill at this time. Well, somebody's planning something. Well, I know a friend in the Navy who's I've talked about the Naval Militia with him, and he said that there isn't. There is a structure for one, but there isn't anybody in it.
That's right. I don't know what's going on.
Well, who's the sponsor?
You get a copy of the bill. And
yeah, I know who the sponsor is. That's what
it
I
sounds
can't
like
understand.
A good bill to pick up.
I don't
some
have
time
the bill. What's the sponsor? Well,
request
the
part of
the Armed Forces of the United States.
Well, then is there an Alaska Naval Militia?
No.
Yes, there is. There is a structure. But there is no one in it.
A null set.
It has been authorized.
Yeah.
Was there an effective date for that activation?
The Alaska Naval Militia, as I understand, doesn't exist. Period. And this bill would create it.
Well, how can that buy that?
I don't think that's even bigger.
Well, under 2605222, creation and administration of the Alaska National Guard, and then they add an Alaska Naval Militia.
So retirement plan.
Oh, retirement plan.
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
It's just a little bit indistinct.
Is there a something bigger here beyond the militia when it says that or the Armed Forces of the United States on the second page of the bill? Is that broadening something?
affects the eligibility for receiving a benefit under the National Guard retirement plan.
Before, it just read more, 20 years or more of service and upon reaching 55 years of age, and what service referred to previously was only the Alaska National Guard service. So it wasn't necessary to clarify it or talk about a composite total. I don't know what the reasoning for taking out the 55 years of age is.
Then they add it back down under the...
Okay.
Is that a non-contributory entity, Paul?
Yeah, I think what it is they...
I suggest we have Paul contact the sponsor of the bill, the governor, or something, to get more background, and we deal with this one at the next meeting.
Well, I
would have to vote against it on the basis of what I don't know.
I would feel that way too.
I have no recommendation.
But I would say that since this, the Department of Military Affairs was responsible for the program, says there's no one in it, then I think it's a waste of time to create legislation that affects no one.
How about just accepting the fiscal note and not putting any recommendation on it then? It obviously is kind of a trivial deal.
Well, okay. Well,
there's somebody out there, even if they say there isn't.
Let me ask a couple. Back to Jerry. The money's appropriated each year.
It's a non-contributory.
Right. What it is they pay them $50 a month for each month they're in the service. So if you're in the service for 100 months, you'll get 100 months at $50. You get 50, you get 100 payments of $50 that you'll get.
When?
Once.
You retire?
Once you are no longer in the, well, let's just say in the National Guard and you've reached age 55, and the commanding officer certifies to military affairs that you've got that many months, and you have to have, let's see, you've had to have 20 years at that time.
Well, is there, did we agree, decide whether there is an Alaska Naval Militia?
There is one, but there is no one in it.
Well, how do you know there is one?
Well, there's a statute that created one. However, there's never, I don't know if they've authorized any money. They don't have staff or they don't have any members.
Kind of like the Alaska Toll Bridge Authority.
Yeah.
You seen the statute?
Well, not actually seen it with my own eyes, but I'm taking this from a friend of mine who's in the Navy, and he said there was one, and that if he was in Alaska, which he's not now, he could be in it.
Okay, I understand that, but I'm saying I'm not wholly.
You don't believe me.
Alaska militia. See, so that might be one reason why I would object to the bill. You know, I'm not that sure. And then the other point that Merrick,
you kind of get a feeling you're getting sucked into something.
Yeah,
don't you?
For sure. Yeah. I have no objection to granting the benefit if it's equal to what the National Guard gets, and there's been a justification for giving it to the National Guard. They're already receiving it. If there was a group comparable to the National Guard in the Navy, I wouldn't feel quite as reluctant to pass this bill. But since there's nobody there, I think it's kind of foolish to just create legislation without a benefit. Because I feel like someone is planning something somewhere and I'm not going to help them.
Well,
when somebody actually comes before me and says, I'm in the Naval Militia and I'm not getting the benefit that these guys are, I say, oh, okay, well, I'll reconsider it then.
We might postpone this until we can have
information or testimony from any one of the beneficiaries.
We could request that the commandant from the Alaska Naval Militia appear before us.
Yeah, I'd like to have one of the beneficiaries appear for us. But the other question, what about this one, the last paragraph at the bottom of page one and then the top of page two? It says 20 years or more service in the Alaska National Guard, and then this Alaska Naval Militia, and then the third one, or the Armed Forces of the United States. Now, what are we buying there? That's underlined, so that means that's an inclusion. What is Alaska having to do now that comes from federal service?
No, it's combining that as a... It's like using that for vesting, that idea.
So, if you're going to use your $50 a month, here's a guy who retires with 20 years. Armed Forces then goes over to the National Guard or to this mysterious naval militia that we have got, that he would be entitled to $50 a month for his 20.
No.
No.
It's only on the National Guard
only
or
the
Naval
National Guard.
Militia.
But that would surely make him entitled. He could put like 8 years in instead of having to put 20 years in.
He could have 15
he could have,
or 19 in the
he
military.
Could have 12 years Armed Forces, 8 years National Guard, and apply for 20 years.
Right.
But he wouldn't get paid for 20.
Would that
He'd
have
only
any,
get paid for the 8 of
would
National
there be any
Guard.
Significance? You know, there are those who never quite got to the 20 years to get the Armed Forces military benefits retirement. Is there anything special about that as far as these people are concerned? They could have, you know, 15 or 19 years of Armed Forces military service and then a year or two of Alaska National Guard or Naval Militia. Is there anything wrong with that? See, it wouldn't take very much, Alaskan service. He could just pick a year and then take his 19 to the other and
he would only qualify for a year's worth.
Here's what could possibly, well, let's see. He could only qualify for the time he actually served in the Alaska Naval Militia, right? So if he had a year in that, he'd get paid $50?
$12.50 payment.
$50 a month for the number of years he served in the militia.
Number of months.
And if there's nobody in it now,
why is
could we simply recommend it not be passed at this time, since we understand that there is no one that
presently
would be covered?
Yeah. I buy it.
That doesn't rule it out for all.
I was trying to figure out if, you know, some kind of a plan here that somebody might have that's near retirement from the Navy and is planning to take on the job of organizer of the Alaska Militia.
This might give those people who
but he still wouldn't
it
get
some
much.
Reason then for letting us know.
Even if he came and spent a couple of years, he's only getting $50 a month for the number of months that he might.
Well, regardless of the situation.
Ray Coleman?
Yes.
Okay, I have a phone call for you.
If you look at that paragraph B on page 2, that's a long set of underscored words there, and that seems rather special there, that the payment of the retirement pension shall begin the first month after the person's 55th birthday or separation from those two services, whichever is later, and that a member or former member may elect to have payment of retirement pension deferred until any month after his 55th birthday or separation from services, whichever is later. Why is that? Payment of a deferred benefit may not commence.
All that's saying is you don't have to take the benefit if you don't want it.
Yeah. May not commence until application for the benefit is filed with and approved by the Department of Defense. So you don't think that's anything unusual.
Stan, was it 678 or 789?
I think it's
789.
789.
Whole 600.
Yeah. You were right.
But I had a heck of time calling it from the other office building where we were the first study. Man, I couldn't get out of that building. They wouldn't let me make a collect call from there. I was trying to call Anchorage.
I haven't heard anybody do anything on this bill. The legislature just been mute. I think you just got to run out.
It just seemed like it was premature.
My name is Mayor.
You kind of get a feeling somebody had an idea to do something with the Alaska Naval Militia. Got the ability created on the statute trying to establish something for return, and then they're going to do something.
I'd almost suggest that one of the reasons.
I would recommend do not.
I would say let's back off until we know what's going on. It's kind of appealing, sort of like, give me $10 for a car and then I'll show you the car you can buy.
The circumstances involved are seem premature. I know that's a good reason, but that momentarily I want to say it that way.
Yes, it's, no, Olson is my name.
Yeah.
They're still waitlisted. I'm waitlisted too, but they said if we went out, we'd get on.
Well, I told those guys that they could have part of my per diem check. That's the difference. You guys didn't do that.
M. Olson.
But I also gave him a special reason. I said there's a basketball game going on in Anchorage. I just must get back to see them.
Come out and stand.
The guy said, I understand. Okay. I hear you.
By that time, it might be that someone would have canceled already. Thank you.
Where are we? Are we ready to vote on this? What are we doing? The fiscal note. Are there any objections to accepting the fiscal note?
Yes.
All right.
I'm concerned now as I look at this. Maybe they've got Alaska National Guard people who don't have 20 years in, but have got like 8 years in. They may have 12 years. Other active military that would qualify now for the first time.
So this may.
So there may be a fiscal impact.
They may be applying to more than just the naval militia.
That's right. And I have no idea how to figure out who they would be. See what I'm getting at? I think if I read this right,
yes.
If I look at it now, it says, okay, so it would be an active member of the Alaska National Guard. Is eligible for a retirement benefit upon voluntary retirement after 20 years of active service in both.
They include the armed forces.
Right,
then.
Or any combination of these.
You were right in the beginning.
Huh?
You were right in the beginning.
Well,
what is that right there?
Well, you want to just defer this one?
Let's just skip this thing.
Skip it or...
A month ago, I had written a note on here if I had it that soon.
We still have time at the next meeting to take this up, so we can just defer.
Is what I'd written.
Yeah.
Let's just defer this bill to our next meeting and see if we can't learn some more about it.
Okay. I'll mark that down.
And
I could vote on it today.
I could too. But I think we'll.
We've already invested 9 minutes in it.
Now, Mr. Frank.
Okay, so Senate Bill 60 is deferred.
We can vote on it by saying, you know, we don't want it, but it must be recognized the fiscal note doesn't show the impact of National Guard who may have military service.
Well, I would rather to vote on here. We've got 5 minutes before 12. That'd be a good note to end on, and it's advancing our work program, meeting for the day.
I got no problem with doing that. I guess, you know, we could just say that the fiscal note is being revised to determine if there's any cost impact on for the existing naval militia, for the existing National Guard, for those people who have 20, less than 20 years.
Well, then how do we vote on the bill?
Is there likely for any floor action on this before a week from Monday?
No.
Then I can't
I'm in
see
favor
why we
of deferring.
Should vote.
Okay.
Well, I say this, if there's anybody out there in the woods wanting something done on this, a vote will prompt them to take further action.
Perhaps Paul or Ken might to see if anybody has any other information on the Alaska Naval Militia that
sure.
We could use. That might give us some kind of clue. You know, maybe something big's being planned.
I guess the whole question. As far as the fiscal, as I see it, how many National Guard have U.S. military service?
Well,
that would be applied towards their 20 years, and that's the only, as I see now, is the only group that.
Well, as I say, I put in 20 years in the armed forces, I retire. I put in 8 years because I'm got a good job out there. So I got my required time in, I become 55. So here I got 20. I got 8, that's 28 times 12.
No.
Or 20, 50 times 28.
No, the 20 doesn't count.
The 20 counts for eligibility, but you only get paid on the 8.
That you have in the Alaska service.
Right. Right. Yeah. But you would be eligible then.
See, the point I'm trying to get to, you have to have 20 years Alaska Naval, Alaska National Guard in order to get it now. But you may have somebody who's got...
Or be 55.
Or, and be 55.
Not...
And be 55.
Both?
Or, yes. But the point I'm getting at now, if this bill were to pass, there may be a group of people who are in the National Guard that have 8 years and may have 12 years, and then they'd be eligible to be paid on their 8 years. And that group I didn't even consider. And as I look at it now, that should be considered. So the question I got, then the question becomes, how many National Guards have U.S. military service, of which, and then of that group, put in together, we get finally get 20 years. And I'll just check with military affairs and see if they come up with some answer on that.
Well, I know one person here in Anchorage.
It's like that?
Well, not like that as much as when they first started the Alaska Guard, the forerunner of the Alaska, it was a territorial guard that has since been with the National Guard out there ever since. And he went in right at the start of the war when they organized the National Guard, the territorial guards, and it's continued on to the present date. Getting up around 48, 49 years old.
Well,
so
we can either vote on it or postpone it.
All right, let's postpone it.
Okay.
So you give us a little more.
Be in favor of deferring action on Senate Bill 60. Objections to that?
I object to it. I think we have an adequate basis for taking action on it. I don't see any. We can only deal with that which is provided to us. And we have that, so I say I'm concerned that we might act on it.
The board like to vote on whether to take action now or just to go ahead and take action? Are there those opposed to taking action at this time?
I just think it'd be wiser to wait.
Here, you got the only thing we're acting on is this bill, what we have before us.
Well, I guess I, not for the reason that Stan gave, I don't think we should take action just to get a reaction. That's the thing that...
Well, I don't believe in reaction. I don't take part in that, but I take that we are here to act on this bill.
Because we have an objection to deferring it, and we have an objection to taking it up at this time.
Will you restate what the reason was for not taking action on it?
You don't know what the fiscal...
You don't have the fiscal impact.
Well, I think you have an explanatory note that there's nobody in the service.
That's
yeah.
Right, but
well,
he's
yes,
wondering
sure.
About
but he's discovered
the whammy
another
with the National Guard, the thing that
he wants
overlooked
to look at
when he made that up.
He hadn't considered the National Guard implication in the earlier fiscal note.
So are you recommending that no action be taken because of that condition?
I guess what I'm saying is I'm just acknowledging that that was not considered in the fiscal note. And the board wants to, you know, we feel we want to just say, okay, we acknowledge that and we still recommend the dang bill doesn't get passed anyway. We just maybe say we don't want the bill passed in the first place until we know who the Naval militia is. And oh, by the way, it looks like the fiscal note didn't include some costs for the existing National Guard people. You know, I mean, we can do that. Or the other way is, you know, backtrack, get the fiscal note updated, and then say again, we don't want it. You
let's
know,
get
either
it
way, I think we're going to come up saying we don't want it until we know what happens, what this Naval mush is all about. I don't care either way, you know. It's a little egg on my face, and I'm just going to go back and put in a revised fiscal note at some point in time, so it's not a big deal. As far as maybe stopping us from rehashing it, maybe we could I can step back, get a fiscal note back in, you know, to expand this particular point and let the board go ahead. I shouldn't be holding them up, because I left that portion out.
I call for a question on Senate Bill 60.
Are we going to take action?
What we need to decide now by vote is it needs to be something as shall we take up Senate Bill 60 at this time for action? Yes or no? No would defer it. Yes would take it up for a vote now.
What are our alternatives?
Yes or no?
Yes or no?
For taking up Senate Bill 60 for action at this time. Yes or no, Jerry?
Yes.
Stan?
Yes.
Mike?
No.
No.
Paul?
No recommendation.
Yes or no? no option.
Yes, let's do it.
I forgot what I was doing here.
I hope you know what the vote total is today.
What did you say?
Two.
Yes.
Three yeses,
two noes.
Oh, there was two of them?
Yeah. Two noes.
Two noes and three yeses. How I get to this?
Not real well, did it?
I move for action on that. We got that.
The chairman will vote no. So it's a tie. That means it didn't pass, so we'll defer it till next time.
Okay.
Now, I don't...
Let the record show that we spent 29 minutes.
And we got nowhere, but boy, we sure got there.
Yeah. No, we found out something. That's why we deferred it.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, we have Senate Bill number 62, and I really think when 62 is dealt with, it would also be well to deal with 820, because they both speak to cost of living adjustment for future retirement, and it might be that we wouldn't spend much time on one. This is a bill, a cross bill from last year, I believe, isn't it?
Okay, are they identical bills or just
no,
similar?
No, they address themselves the same topic, but they're really quite different.
Okay, well, we can be aware of House Bill?
820. This is Senate Bill 62, and it's House Bill 820.
House Bill 820. Okay, we can keep that in mind as we discuss this.
We got to eat, or I'll come back at noon?
It's 12 o'clock right now. And I don't know if we can take care of Senate Bill 62 in the next 5 minutes.
Yes, we can.
It's a Cooper bill.
Well, that might be a good question. Yeah.
Senate Bill 62 is a Jancy Croft bill.
From last year.
And 820 is a Cooper.
We can deal with 62 in 3 minutes.
Who are those guys? Who wants it?
Everybody can't afford it.
Well, I think there might be some other objections to this, in that, as nearly as I can see, it's not even tied to the consumer price index or anything else. It's just 3% no matter
what. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, it's been superseded by interim action in the form of the committee substitute for House Bill 343.
House Bill 343.
No one seriously considers...
But I think 820 then is...
62, no one considers it as a viable bill. And we could safely, at this point in time, vote do not pass on it.
I'll tell you.
And besides, the fiscal impact is highly significant.
Am I reading that right? $12 million a year?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. The first year.
Start with, yeah.
And at 3%, let's see, it would double in about 20 years? 23 or 24 years?
Just as a benchmark, you can figure on an average that if you have an automatic PRPA, that a 1% automatic PRPA is worth about, it's going to cost the system about 3%.
On covered payroll.
On covered payroll. 2%, 6, 3%, 9, and 4%, 12. By the time you get to 4%, it's around 14%. But you can just about take it times 3, and that's what you're looking at. I've really looked at this, and you know, my personal bias is, yes, you've got to have some kind of an automatic PRPA. But the way it's always been approached, which says, if the index goes up, give the employee a benefit. And that says that whatever the index does, then the employee gets something. But it totally ignores other benefits that's being granted to that employee. And I think what we're trying to do is say, we don't want the purchasing power of a retired employee eroded.
Mm-hmm.
And if you never changed a benefit, then I'd say, yes, you go right straight to the index. But since there's other things affecting that benefit, then you've got to say, then the first question you've got to ask is, what has really happened to the purchasing power of that employee compared to the index? Now, if the purchasing power if the index went up 4 points, but during that year, we granted everybody a one-time 10% PRPA, which happened to the teachers last year. And right now, the purchasing power of that employee has not been eroded. As a matter of fact, it's better off than it was.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say, you shouldn't be granting it. So all I'm trying to get to is that you darn near got to look at it on an individual basis. What was a person's benefit when they first retired, and what are they getting now?
Well,
and then say, what was the index when they retired, and what would their benefit have to be today to keep up with that index? Compare the two, and then that difference is what their PRPA should be.
And how is that different from the timing of the consumer funding?
Because this way you recognize any other improvements to that employee's benefit.
But Paul, why assume that it was the intent of the legislature to offset those other benefits against that? I mean, why hold the PRPA hostage against any other improvements? I mean, you know, like if, for example, medical care, you know, if they wanted to provide an employee, all employees, both past and future, with post-retirement medical benefits, it's not at all clear to me that should be offset against
the
cost of living increase, because what they're saying is, we want to increase the retirement benefits to those people.
Because the concept is to provide the same standard of living, to provide the same standard of living for an employee before retirement is out after, then you have to come into this kind of a concept.
Well, at some point in the future. But why hold the cost of living hostage? I mean, why not grant the cost of living and say, okay, now don't give them anything else, because what the idea is to maintain the standard of living.
You know, the point I'm trying to get to, if the idea is to granting a PRPA is to so that the purchasing power of that employee while on retirement is not eroded, then you've got to say, well, what other things affect the purchasing power of that employee? For example, if when the person first retires, you give that person medical insurance, okay? Then the next year you increase those medical insurances, okay? So what you've really said is, like a retiree has basic medical, but they don't have audio, dental, and visual. So now let's say you add audio, dental, and visual. Okay?
I understand that makes him better off than he was when he retired.
Sure it was. So that's money that he would not have to spend out of his retirement check.
But I'm just saying,
they might want to do that.
They might want to do that. They might not want to maintain him at
the
level.
Then my answer to that is that if they grant a benefit, then the thing that you say is, this particular benefit is not to be construed in the calculation of, or the offset for the granting the PRPA.
Creating a most difficult situation if you were to deal with each individual. I would think all you could say, such as the Anchorage District in negotiating with teachers, indicated medical or fringe benefits might be worth 0.5% on the cost of living, figure of that sort.
It's not a difficult thing, because I've even got existing programs that tells me what a person had when they first retired and what they're currently getting.
Well, sure.
Matter of fact, by the end of this month, I'll even have this comparison I'm speaking to right now.
But you have a different.
I don't question that at all. It's just a question of whether or not that's what.
I'm going to have to end this discussion now.
I'm ready for the question.
It's 10 after 12. I have to leave. I won't be able to return this afternoon.
What are we going to do then?
I'd like to ask Merritt if he would stand in for me this afternoon, and you guys could continue the discussions. If the board feels like they could, if you feel you'd like to continue this afternoon.
How many more actual bills would you say we need?
Never
by when?
Huh?
By when?
I mean, I think it's really important.
You don't need to do any more at this session. It is simply that anything not done at this session will have to get done at the next session.
One day may not be enough if you don't continue today.
When are you? You're leaving.
I'll be leaving at 4:30 down here.
And we're going to try to go out, I think.
Same time and take a chance.
If they don't get on, they gotta go shopping after.
So whatever, if you choose to go on in the afternoon, whatever you get done this afternoon will be something you don't
have to do.
Don't have to do at the next meeting, and I think it will be close whether or not you can get the amount that you have to do done in one day next time. Very close.
Well, I just really.
You can't at the rate that we've been going, for sure. No matter whether you work today and tomorrow and work 2 days. I mean. Without about 4 days to meet, that you haven't got a chance to deal with all these bills. They just haven't been moving anywhere near fast enough to do it.
I'd like to suggest that you continue meeting if you can today.
So.
I'm not going to speak to that one. I'm just saying that I could have and would have and will yet vote on both 60 and 62 within the next 3 to 5 minutes.
We already deferred 60.
Well, saying the same thing about 62.
Want to vote on 62 and break and come back after lunch?
It's okay with me.
Hold on. Without more discussion. Let's go to lunch.
Yeah, I feel that 62.
You will. You're on.
62 is
I knew you were gonna take that
is
wrong.
Raising a lot of questions for the first time with the board of cost of living allowances, and there may be other bills that speak to it better, but I think that the board sort of has to compare them.
The board might take a sort of a Supreme Court route. And not necessarily address the whole question at once. I think there's wisdom in that. I mean, you may know what the bottom line question is, but not want to address it by the time. I know that courts do that frequently. You might simply, for example, just recommend Senate Bill 62 on the grounds that, you know, it's just a flat 3% that doesn't bear any relation to cost of living or whatever. There are a number of objections to that without really settling the bottom line question, do you think there should be a cost of living increase?
Yeah.
And I think at some points the board is going to have to, you know, take that kind of attack, whether or not that's the place for it, I don't know, but it can save you a lot of time.
I would imagine if we did meet this afternoon, we'd probably have to adjourn by about 3 anyhow. So we're probably about an hour and a half in, 2 hours most.
What's your pleasure, Joe?
I go from 1 to 3. I go 1 to 15.
So, all right with me.
I'd rather get a little more on. Well, I think by then we get to the 2 Senate bills, 90-91. I think that would cap my whole week off.
I can take care of that for you right now, Paul.
Do pass.
Do not.
Which one?
90 and 91, or isn't that the judiciary?
Yeah, funding
I
judiciary.
Think they were good.
Funding the
91.
Judiciary. I don't want to get them funded, don't you?
Well, certainly I want to get them funded.
Mainly for the reason to show how much it costs.
Well, if we're coming back, I'm going to leave my letter. Well, with him nosing into it, the girl found out this morning she made a mistake, so they just doubled it. On account of him.
I guess maybe we'd better get started.
Okay, I'm ready.
We were dealing with 62, and it seemed to me the consensus was that we should then move on to 90 and 91. Does that sound satisfactory with everyone to move to 90 and 91 after dispensing with 62?
Just
move on to that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we going to do something with
62? That was still left up in the air.
You said you had it all worked out for us, Mr. Stanley. You was bragging again.
No, I just say what
here
I
it is right here.
I had my notes. Is that my notes there? There they are. Good. I know all the help I can get.
Oh,
Next time. Well, you see, it isn't my fault. I didn't get my packet until...
You guys must have stopped off this triangle.
At the 13th hour, or 23rd hour.
Well, I tell you.
So next time I'm going to have a nice, neat folder like this fellow, but I don't have the clerical help to do it for me.
No, I did this on a Saturday.
Well, he was, in one hand he had a trowel, in the other hand he had a block of concrete, and then what word do you have this?
Got to get up pretty early in the morning.
Stanley,
with all our...
for us to take and do this right, if the administration or somebody had taken and give us a couple of those books like that, we could go home and punch them out and put our stuff in order.
Yeah, but then we'd have to raise a fiscal note somewhere.
Oh, that costs
that's
money.
That's covered under your per diem, you know.
Oh, that's extra luxury, sir. Okay.
Well, I guess we can't do business while Mike is gone, because we
okay.
can't apply it. I suppose we could discuss it, but we can't vote.
Well,
someone has something to say.
We could vote and then ask him to cast his vote when he might.
Yeah. Stan?
Senate Bill number 62 was introduced by Chauncey Croft. A year ago in March, and it basically establishes, I guess that's written up here, a graduated set of percentages whereby retirees of record would respectively receive a different and a graduated set of percentages of pension adjustment, like I can't remember what figures he used, like 3, 6, 9, 12, and 15. In other words, somebody who retired 5 or 9 years ago would get as much as 12 or 15% adjustment on his basic benefit. And very ambitious thing in terms of the amount of adjustment that those older retirees would receive. And of course, that was desirable in that respect alone. But in consideration of the total cost, it has a high fiscal impact of $12 or $18 million, depending on how far you go with it and how inclusive it is. Secondly, that's my first point. Secondly, is an interim post-retirement pension adjustment was approved and granted, whereby, namely, under the provision of the Senate Committee Substitute for the Committee Substitute for House Bill 343. Thirdly, within the provisions of 62, as it was set up, those were not closely geared in terms of the graduated percentages to perhaps all the circumstances or factors upon which a cost of living adjustment could be based. And so by comparison, we're saying that, I'm saying, that this interim measure under 343 tends to supersede that. And so momentarily I see that this is really kind of a, it is not a viable bill. I would look at the opportunity for ruling upon a do not pass for it, you know, based on those circumstances. Although I'm certainly not quarreling with the intent of it, to provide a cost of living adjustment for retirees. Furthermore, as an extended point, fourth or fifth, whatever it is, there is a provision under consideration in this current period of time, namely House Bill 820, which will invite our attention and deserves our attention, and perhaps again tends to supersede what was Senate Bill 62.
I think we might even go on to say that the Senate Bill number 62, drawn up by Chauncey Croft, had the support of the teacher group. And now they no longer are pushing this bill because they feel the financial implications at this time are too great. And so instead they are supporting others. So I don't think there will be much reaction to our opposing this bill. Do we want to look at the financial note, that the fiscal note that Paul has prepared, and take action in that?
I see no reason why we should accept it, even though we're going to turn down the...
Okay, so we vote on that, and we'll just take Mike's vote when he comes in, as Paul suggested. Barry?
Yeah.
Stan?
What is the question?
We accept the financial note. Christmas.
Well, I accept it as presented, noting that it has high fiscal impact.
I do, Paul, okay. Pending Mike's arrival, we won't show the vote. I guess as far as the statement is concerned, I would prefer, since we feel that this isn't a viable bill now, simply to indicate that some notation of the high financial implications. Maybe others want to stress other items, but it seems to me that that would dispense with it at this time, the high fiscal implications. Are there other thoughts on it?
Fiscal impact seems too great at this time.
Mm-hmm. I think the point that Ken made this morning about that it just grants a flat 3 to 15% increase without really looking at what the index has done is probably the most very important. I'm sure that the reason was that they must know that the index has gone up, et cetera, et cetera. But really, as far as the law actually spelling it out, it's not there.
I think it was kind of a compromise, wasn't it? That it might even be higher if it had been tied to the cost of living.
Certainly it would.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But this is prospective also, is it not?
Well, I regard it as being what they call a
paid beginning July 1st of each year. So as far as past years are concerned, certainly the 3% will fall short of what the anchorage index has done, but who knows about the future?
Yeah.
I think, you know, the smart economic money certainly is on a higher rate of inflation than 3%, but why leave it, you know, to that kind of change?
I suppose we could simply say it does not really reflect the cost of living.
Well, I tend to regard it as a straight across the board adjustment. It's not comprehensive. It doesn't extend itself to other periods of time.
Oh,
once
but it
you,
does.
Once, yes, you, it once does. You implement right. that, those become compounded. But I didn't read it that they would get another an additional 3% the year after.
Ad infinitum.
Yes.
Well, I said that a new retiree, the first year would get 3%, a second year retiree would get 6%, a third year retiree would get 9%, 12%, and so on. And once they got that, those got it. They got it, and it stayed in their benefits, but they didn't get another 3, 6, 9, and 12, and 15 additionally the year following.
No, each person would get 3%.
Each year.
Compounded in addition to whatever they got on the first of each July. Continually compounded and extended indefinitely into the future.
There's two things that are happening. We're saying that everybody shall get 3% additional each year.
A maximum of 5 years retroactive.
And then everybody else who retired before July 1 of 76, in addition to that 3%, can get an additional increment up to a max of 15%.
In other words, up to a maximum of 5 years.
5 years. 5 years retroactive. Mm-hmm. That's what it's really saying, right?
I don't agree.
Well, look at section 1 and section 2.
Actually, it's not artfully stated.
If you want to cast your vote
for
the fiscal note, the rest of
us voted. Now, I'm dealing with hindsight. I'm dealing with recall and understanding of what it meant to do. And that was determined as of now, if it were being passed, it would go back and treat all retirees of record on as how long they had been in retirement. And those with a longer period of retirement credit, longer period of retirement, would get the 9 or 12 or 15%. But that applied now. That's where your 5 years goes up. It went up to a maximum of 15%, 5 times 3. But that's a one-time affair. They're not going to do it again next year, another 15%.
Not that part, but the 3%.
But the 3% is progressing.
I don't read it that way. As far as I'm concerned, that's a multiplier of 3 for each year of retirement that they've had under their belt up to a maximum of 5 years.
I read this for the future, though. A retired teacher shall receive an adjustment in his retirement salary equal to 3% a year, and that would take care of future retirees as well.
Okay. If I had been in retirement for 5 years, I would have gotten a figure determined by the basis of my 5 years that I'd been in retirement times a 3% factor.
He would have gotten 50%.
Add to, if I had 100% before, I'd get 115%. And I'd be stuck with that.
All right, what would you get then a year from now?
I wouldn't get 130%.
No, you would get, it would go to a little above 118.
A little bit above that, yeah.
Yeah.
A little more than 118, yeah.
You can note that my vote is accepted.
Okay.
We're just discussing before we vote on this.
I'll qualify that one step further by saying I don't have reason to believe that even the 3% would be added the second year.
Well, that's what subsection 8 says.
Well, I see it a different way. I'm standing on the side of here. And so I just have to say there's a difference of opinion on this, and I don't think we need to extend the discussion, but if we need to, make some other point, we can go on together.
Are you ready for a vote? Would argue?
Right, are you ready to vote on this bill then? Do pass, do not pass, or no recommendation, Jerry?
Do not.
Yeah.
Do not pass.
Right.
Well, no recommendations. I'm up on your arguments here.
Do not pass.
Do not.
I had said while you were out that as far as I was concerned in the explanation, I had thought simply that the financial implications were such that we were not recommending it at this time. I think someone mentioned that they felt there should be additional items. So we're open now for discussion on what we want, any accompanying notes that we want for this decision.
According to what Stan said here, where he tied it in, we committed to substitute for House Bill 343 and 320. That part of the bill has been enacted and taken care of.
That's just for past retirees.
Well,
of course.
Yeah, that's fine.
So that I don't think that would be a very, my own personal feeling is that isn't an especially good reason.
Okay.
Well, how do you react to the statement regarding the fiscal implications for the time being? Would you prefer not to have that in, or do you want not to have any remarks to accompany it?
Well, I think probably that there should be some reason, and what the intent of the bill and the way it is written, I haven't scrutinized these other two bills. When you bring up future retirees and things like that, Mayor, I couldn't make any comment on that, but that what you and Stan have said, that these other bills tie in part or most of 62, I don't see what else we could put in it.
I imagine we will get to philosophy as we deal with some of the other bills anyhow, so that we will have a chance to. But there are some other COLA bills, 820 I believe is, so that we will have a chance to expand on philosophy if we want to make this brief.
Well, on this particular bill, I'm looking at this particular bill, and we made reference to two other bills. That doesn't stop us when we come to them to talking for them, and I'm just looking for a reason as to why we felt that do not pass this bill because it's been taken care of in other bills that's passed.
How about the suggestion of, instead of what I had said before, the idea that might suggest that there are other bills under consideration that have less fiscal implications than this bill.
You can buy some more stock in that case.
Without naming them. There are other bills addressing
How about just say that you might want to indicate, apparently there's some sort of general agreement that there's merit in the idea of a cost of living increase. Am I right in that? So you might want to indicate that and just say, because otherwise the do not pass might be misinterpreted. So you might say there is merit in the concept of a cost of living increase, but the board feels that this is better addressed in other bills with
both
less fiscal
financial
impact
implications and if we wanted, and
more
as
responsive
to
the
cost of living. Probably
I think there's probably three things that come into play. One, it's very expensive. You've got to recognize that. Two, the reason it's not being pushed anymore is because House Bill 343 passed and gave all teachers a 10% increase. So it's taken a sort of a second seat. And then the third thing is, the way it reads here, it doesn't even tie to any index. It just grants it. So I think, I think if you're stating the points, one, it's very expensive. The concept is there, but it should be noted that this has a tremendous fiscal impact. I mean, that shouldn't be a reason for denying it, saying no. But I think it's worth noting that we're talking about big bucks, okay? And the next reason is the board recognizes that House Bill 343 passed last year and granted a 10%, so this granted some relief.
As far as the retroactive part.
Right.
Yeah,
and then the third part of it, I think, is why we wouldn't say, okay, even if the retroactive were not in there, only addressing the future, is that it's not tied to any index. It just says granted. And my own personal bias is not only should it be tied to an index, it should also recognize other improvements and benefits. Or to put it differently, it's sort of like in a collective bargaining where if you have a benefit that you've negotiated, the next year you want to go in and negotiate, the first thing that comes up is, well, you know, that benefit we negotiated last year, there's maintenance on that. And that maintenance has gone up and that costs money. And so if you want a 50 cent an hour increase and the maintenance for last year's benefits are 20 cents, now you only got 30 cents for new benefits. And we're not recognizing that here. That's why, kind of like with the health insurance, if you grant a benefit and it costs you $60, and then 1 year that rate goes up by 60%, well, quite obviously, if the employer foots the bill, that sure in the heck is a big chunk of your cost of living increase. If you had to go out and pay an extra 60% yourself to maintain that benefit, rather than the employer picking it up, well, obviously that cuts into your purchasing power very deeply. So from an equity standpoint, that should be recognized. Equity to the employee and to the employer. That's all I'm getting to. It doesn't tie to an index, and it also doesn't look at other types of benefits the employer is picking up that improve that purchasing power.
Okay, let's
see.
And
would you rate it back, and then
we'll see if we agree
or not.
See how it goes down. The board feels there is merit in the concept of a cost of living allowance. The fiscal impact of this bill is great. And House Bill 343 already granted a cost of living increase to retirees. The rate of increase is not responsive to pertinent factors, such as the consumer price increase.
Now, didn't we have some,
I don't know
whether
we should call it 343, probably have to refer to the chapter and session.
Okay, I'll get the right side on that.
Now, you eliminated your first statement that, I think you had made some type of a comment before, paraphrased.
I'd, in accepting the fiscal note, I'd written down that the fiscal impact seems too great at this time. You want to strike that and just leave the comment below.
I felt it was safe to say that the fiscal impact is very high.
Okay, well then just maybe just that second statement.
But the fiscal impact is of significant consideration.
Well, any post-retirement pension adjustment is going to be significant, because I don't know whether we have to consider that, you know, as a negative factor, that it's going to cost. I mean, we know it's going to
consideration.
Cost. Yeah, it almost boiled down to if it's little money, let's not worry about the inequity. If it's big money, then we've got to consider whether there's equity there or something. You know what I'm getting at? It's kind of like when Bill comes through to take care of one guy and it only costs $10,000, they kind of scuff out and let it go through, you know.
So the private bills are accepted almost.
Yeah.
Is what Ken has written acceptable? Stan, would you like to expand on your comment? You said something about... I wasn't quite sure if your statement meant you disagreed with those statements or not.
I don't recall which statement that was. The latest one I made was in regards to fiscal impact, which coincides closely with what he's saying.
Okay, are there any objections to the list that he's given? Okay. Paul, do you want to give us some more background on Bill 90 and 91?
I'd like to start with 91, that's easier to work from that one, all right?
There's no fiscal note for 90 or 91.
There will be one.
But there are presently.
And well, it's written up, it's going through the review process right now. What 90, Senate Bill 91 does, takes the existing judicial system, puts it on a funded basis. Now,
is it true, Paul, that the cost of doing that would be largely data processing?
No.
No.
What we would do is just have a contribution go into the convocation code.
Then. Is it not true that the fiscal impact? Well,
see, well
the overall the fiscal impact, I guess, would be zero. Right? I mean, because if you don't change the benefit structure, then you don't change the ultimate cost of the system. But it would mean that we would pay more now. So in the early years, there would be cost impact, although offset by lower costs in later years. That might be pointed out.
Yeah, the fiscal impact is what I wrote here on my fiscal note is it assumed that the contributory judicial retirement system is funded in a similar manner to the PERS and TERS, where the employer makes regular contributions. The level of contribution is expressed as a percentage of covered payroll for active members. The contribution rate indicated below has been determined by our actuary to be the significant to fund current benefits as they accrue and to amortize existing past service unfunded liabilities.
You have a fiscal note there, but it just hasn't been checked through.
Right, so.
Do you think it would be all right if the board passed on it subject to Bob Gett's approval and in that way had a fiscal note effectively?
Sure, I got no problem with that. This has got to fly now.
We're flying.
Well, you know, subject to approval, but if the board doesn't...
You want to look at it? You want
to make copies for us, could we? Or do you want to read it?
I mean, that's the note, and I just...
You're looking for a fiscal note?
No, there isn't one. Right. And so what, and then the next statement was, we said the non-contributory judicial retirement system, AS 2225. To fund that would cost 103.46% of covered pay. And this is based on an estimated payroll of $1,900,000. And we also assume that salaries will increase at 5% per year. this is somewhat different than what the judicial system is, which sets a fixed rate and then everybody gets paid at that at each of the three court levels. But we have seen an increase in that salary over time because of just change in the statutory salary schedule. So we feel that 5% is reasonable.
And it's understood, of course, that this applies only to new judges coming into the system.
No, it's for the existing system. Take care of
it. Doesn't require contributions.
It doesn't require contributions.
From the judges.
But it will apply to,
right.
It funds two things. It funds the past service that has never been funded for the active judges. It funds the future service for those active judges. It funds the past service for justices, future service for justices, and also funds the past costs for retirees, for those who are currently retired.
Okay.
Now,
right.
So in 91, in the first year, the state would have to set aside $1,832,700 to put this on a funded basis. Now the court system has already set aside $369,300 to pay benefits for people who are currently on retirement. Therefore, from an appropriation standpoint, the legislature would have to appropriate an additional $1,463,400 in the first year to make up that difference. Okay. Now, like Ken said, in the long run, you're going to end up paying it sooner or later. But from a fiscal note standpoint, if you were to put it on a funded basis, what the note requires, these are the appropriations that have to be made in each of those years.
I think that ought to be noted, though. You know, that this is just a way of leveling the payments that will be required anyway. That's what putting it on a funded basis means.
Well, I suppose we can put all that stuff in there. I didn't put it in the fiscal note.
We can put it in here, right. I don't expect that kind of a comment to be widely appreciated.
So that's what the bill is. Okay. Now Senate Bill 90 goes one step further and says not only Senate Bill 90 and 91 were two companion bills put in by the governor. The first one was to fund the existing system, and the second one was to set up a new system that was contributory with exactly the same benefits as the old system.
And this, of course, applies to the contribution only to new members coming in.
Right, so only to new members. So what you have to do there, and what we assumed, and I haven't got that fiscal note done, but what we assumed was that we would add about 3 new judges to the system each year. And the cost to cover those judges would be fifty-seven plus percent a year. 57.06, reduced by a 7% contribution for the judge, which brings it down to 50.06%. That assumption means that we wouldn't be paying anything back in refunds. If you pay something back in refunds, then the 7% contribution is worth 7%, it's worth something less. So what you would be doing is multiplying an average salary of about 46,000 times 3 times 50%. And then next year you would increase that by 5%, and then you multiply 46,000 times 5% times 6 judges times 50%, and then the next year it would be 9 times 5% times 5% times, and that's how you'll build the system up. I haven't done that. The figure that we were using was incorrect, so I don't have the percent. But it'll start off at around, let's see if I can give you a rough idea. Well, it'd be very close to about $69,000 in the first year. and then it'll go up to about 48,000 maybe the second year. Third year go up to about 230,000. The fourth year will be about 300 and say 30 or 40,000. And then the fifth year, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the fifth year would be about 450,000, just eyeballing the numbers.
Now whether you have at the next meeting,
yes, should have that. Sure, absolutely. And I'm sure it'll parallel that. We used 49.46%, but it's, you know, as a starting, it's supposed to be 50.06, so we're very close to what we had in this bill.
Question on that. Is the way that you visualize this happening, this process of getting the judicial system or systems, as the case may be, on a paying basis to first get this 91 passed, which would fund the existing system, then enact this new contributory system, which would essentially end the old system except for those who are already under it, and it would begin winding down, albeit on a funded basis. The new system will start out with essentially no past service liability, and it would take on over.
Right.
Is that?
Then I think the third area, or the third step, is then to physically look at the benefits that are being offered and ask, are they excessive? And if so, you know, you're going to have another bill that says, you know, new judges coming on now are going to have this system, and it's going to have a particular benefit structure.
Seems like that might occur at the same point in time as the new system is established.
Right. And I agree it should. The only difference that I see is that the time frame between adjusting the judicial system, well, finally coming up and recognizing and adjusting the judicial system could be years and years away, or it may never even happen. So I would think that at least if we can put it on a contributory basis, you minimize the cost to the state of about 7% to begin with. 7% of pay, and that's one step towards cutting back those benefits. The next step is, you know, you may have to come up with Senate Bill 92 that says, you know, new judges coming in after July 1 of 80 or 85, whenever they get around to doing it, that at that point in time, instead of having a 5% formula, you got a 2% formula. Instead of having everything go on to your survivor, you know, you have a joint survivor and those kinds of things. But I think we're very, very far away, and I don't see any legislation even come close to doing that.
Jerry, I think has something.
Well, from what I've read in 90, I can agree with Paul, any way to get it started wholeheartedly there. But in reading 90, where these people received the same retirement benefits as they did without contributing anything, is exorbitant. And at somewhere along the line, it is going to cost the money, the state, some more money other than their contribution to take and pay for these benefits.
About 50% of pay.
Well, as I say, so somewhere along the line when we make our remarks or something, that I feel that their retirement benefits should be the same as, say, PERS and TRS, which we know is more realistic, I think.
Yeah, I would think that if we pass 91 out that funds what we've got, then pass 90 out that funds, starts a new system. At that point in time would be the thing to hammer on the idea that we're passing out with the idea that at least it makes the system contributory. And the next point is that the next thing that should be happening is reviewing the benefits that are offered, and would suggest legislative action in that area, or some kind of committee established to review it. We got a salary committee. Maybe we need, what we need specifically is a judicial or some kind of a study group. I don't know what you call it. Unless they're thinking that we're going to do that, but I don't think we are.
Interim legislative.
Yeah, an interim legislative committee.
I thought I had it. Didn't the salary commission come up with recommendations for the judges and stuff?
And salaries, but I don't think they did the retirement. Or did they?
I thought they had something in there. I've read the one for a long time ago, and I kind of recall.
They might have mixed. I don't know.
Recommended increasing it to 7% per year.
Paul, I don't know on, we've been accepting fiscal notes, but we didn't really receive the fiscal note you presented orally for 91, whether we should act on the fiscal note or just on the bill.
Here's a copy of it.
That's what's gonna be going on.
Maybe before we leave, we could get copies run off.
The only thing that hasn't happened, hasn't gone through our department. They said no.
Look at it.
Okay.
And let him.